Now, we all know that UFO abductions are generally a very strange and complex phenomenon, aren't they? But some UFO abductees have reported that they also have been kidnapped by military intelligence personnel. What happens to them, and why is it happening? In a moment, Melinda Leslie, Joe Montaldo join us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Melinda Leslie, she's been public with her own abduction experiences for 18 years, researched covert ops involvement and abductions for 15 of those years, and interviewed over 40 abductees with this involvement. For about 9 years, Melinda was the director of a UFO lecture series hosting more than 90 of the top names in the field. In addition to her abduction work, Melinda has been a paranormal researcher for more than 20 years and a founding member of the Orange County Paranormal Researchers Group, which has conducted formal investigations for 8 years. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Hi, Melinda.
Hi there.
Good to have you with us. A fascinating topic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, it's an important topic to me and to many other people listening right now.
Well, we've got Joe Montaldo with us, too, the founder and director of the International Community for Alien Research, ICAR, has close to 7,000 abduction cases on file. Mr. Montaldo has been a researcher, investigator of alien contact, abductions, and experiencers for 20 years. Plus, he's the owner of Paranormal Radio and the host of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. He's also a board member representing contactees for Dr. Michael Sala's Exopolitics Institute. Here he is. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good. Always a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having us back on.
Absolutely. Okay, this is a fascinating topic, one that I really haven't gotten into. And as we all know, the alien abduction phenomenon by itself is very strange. Now we add to it this ingredient of the possibility of other involvement. So I'll start with you, Leslie. And Joe, you jump in, too. Let's do it just like the three of us sitting down at a table here. What are we talking about here with these military kidnappings of UFO abductees?
Well, we're talking about people having experiences first with aliens, having what is considered the typical or normal alien abduction experience, and then who get targeted by military and covert ops groups. It may start off with low-grade harassment and surveillance and work its way up to deeper levels of involvement. That may include what we call the reabduction scenario, where they may be picked up by these military or covert intelligence groups, interrogated about their abductions, threatened, this kind of scenario. They may have medical or genetic research or experiments done on them. They may be tested for psi. And as I said, they could have all sorts of surveillance and harassment mm-hmm. kinds of things. And then it can even get into deeper levels, which I'm sure we'll get into later even in the show, which is something called the minder scenario, where they can be befriended by insiders who ask them questions about their experiences.
Almost tricked, huh?
Yeah, and have more involvement in their lives beyond their having the harassment, surveillance, and the reabduction. So it's kind of like this whole range of stuff. And some people just have one end of the scale. Some people are middle of the scale. Some people can be the far end of the scale and can have a variety of things happening.
Joe, when did this start? It wasn't ongoing with these abduction cases. Did this start a little later?
Well, that's a tough one. We got some evidence to suggest it may have been going on for at least 40-plus years, but I got to be honest with you. I found a few cases that may date back 40 years that I would consider MILAB cases. But for me, really, it's been mostly the last 10 to 14 years. And Melinda's the one that actually, we were studying MILABs. We knew there was military involvement, which is a bad word to start off with, but we knew there was involvement by some type of government operation. Which actually about 5 years ago, when I used to host Wake Up, because I host UFO Undercover now, but she was on the show and she happened to talk about reverse engineering of contactees. So it got me thinking. I pulled out all the cases I hadn't looked at in 7, 8, 9, 10 years, pulled them all out, started going back and looking for where, when the abductee or the contactee was picked up by the military agency, what was going on doing this. Now, sometimes there's a realm of experiences, but there is a place in here where they seem to be using these contactees for, well, frankly, for knowledge. There's been times where there's been, they'll bring in like pieces of what we would consider to be extraterrestrial technology that the government really has no idea how it works, but the contactee seems to at least have some idea of what it is. And they've been slowly but surely doing this. And then there's a part, which I know is going to get in a little early in the show, but I know there's a part basically where they started programming these contactees. It's something we do ourselves. I'm not going to lie. I mean, as an abduction researcher, we program our contactees to ask questions, you know,
sure.
Anytime they're picked up. Well, it seems our government is doing the same thing. And let me correct myself while the audience is listening. The thing about it is we use government and military. Frankly, I don't want to say this is George Bush's government or whoever's government.
This could be way above it, right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be located to any one president. Maybe way back, but now it just seems to be there's an operation that goes on, which is completely funded from somewhere in our government, but I have no idea. I would be lying to you if I could tell you who it was.
And isn't it possible, Joe, that presidents don't even know that this is happening?
Oh, I would think most presidents don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think it's known by what you would consider the surface level of the government. I think you're talking what's called, you know, black projects, deep black, special ops, that this is very compartmentalized and need to know. And you know, these are the same guys doing the crash retrievals, as an example. You know, the crash retrievals, the reverse engineering of craft, this is part of that crowd.
Almost like there's a whole department somewhere that handles this specifically.
Well, it's like what Melinda was talking of earlier. We'll have abductees that get what we call passive. It's, you know, low-grade surveillance, phone taps. You might see what appears to be somebody watching it. But nothing that you could go to, like, your local sheriff and say, hey, look, this guy's following. But it's subtle enough that you notice it, but not aggressive enough that it warrants getting someone involved. But there does seem to step up from there.
How do they know who they are, Joe? How do they know that these folks have been abducted? I mean, we don't put every abduction case on the air. I don't think you do. How do they know who they are and where they are?
Well, I think this started a while back. You know, we know that the grays especially track us through our DNA, not so much through implants or anything like that. Darryl and I have both worked on this for a while, but it seems like that they track us through our genetics. The government, on the other hand, somewhere along the line, and I have no idea where, George, but somewhere along the line, they've got pervy information to at least some of these people. And since abductions happen mostly in family lines, not exclusively, but mostly in family lines, once they find a family, they pretty much have it. You know, they can go through, you know, the children. If you and your wife are contactees, you have five or six children, and they're probably all contactees, or I should say abductees. Well, there they go. There's seven of them right there they have to choose from.
Does this ops program, maybe they have a mole in the UFO community somewhere?
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
Yes.
I have no doubt about that. I actually think they have several, to be honest with you. But I try to stay away from that one.
Yeah. But very, very much so. I mean, there's even a history of some of the organizations in the UFO community having people with well-known intelligence backgrounds, you know, being members of the boards of those organizations,
sure.
Even running those organizations,
mm-hmm.
That there's always been an intelligence background connection in the UFO field. That can be seen both ways. On one hand, that can be problematic, and you can say, well, they're moles and they're feeding back information to some organization. Okay, yeah. And then you can also say, well, they're also there because they have seen something, because they are an insider, because they have some true knowledge. They're saying what they can from their past experience and helping, you know, give some information and can be supportive. So it works both ways. It can be a good thing or a bad thing. And the truth is, you don't know. I just think it's important in the UFO community that we look our gift horses in the mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you both say that some of these abductees are reverse engineered. Explain that.
Go ahead, Melinda.
He hands it off to me.
That's right. And a good handoff it was.
Well, that's because what happened was I was actually interviewed on another show with Tim Banal, and who actually also writes for After Dark.
Sure, and he does a lot of work for us, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And Tim's fantastic. And in an interview I did with him, as I was explaining all this, he said, oh, it's like they're reverse engineering the abductees. And I went, what? And as he said this, it just stuck. And I was like, that is the perfect way to look at it. And for a long time, I'd been slightly uncomfortable with the term my lab that's typically used for this, which means military abduction, because it puts such an a spin on it as far as it being the military.
Right.
You put such a focus on that and a negative focus. And I don't think this isn't your, you know, we say, you know, like they used to have the car commercials, isn't your grandfather's Oldsmobile, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this isn't your grandfather's military.
This is not your Iraqi soldier who is risking his life. This
exactly.
is way above
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because it's more, I think, black ops than that, that because of that, I've been uncomfortable with that term. So when he said reverse engineering the abductees, I went, that's it. Cause, and I started to call it, as opposed to my lab, calling it rehab. Rehab on one hand meant re-abduction,
mm-hmm.
so they're being re-abducted, which made perfect sense, and it was kind of a play on words. And then REABs for reverse engineered abductee. And what that means is just like there are crash retrievals that are gathered, picked up, the technology is worked on, they try to reverse engineer it, they try to figure out what it is about that technology, how does it work, how does it function, what can we learn about the aliens from that technology. In the same way, I think that the abductees are gathered and picked up and questioned for the same kind of information, that they want to know, what do we know about the aliens? What do we know about the alien agenda? What do we know about alien motives? What do we know about the technology? Have we seen it? Have we had hands-on? Have we navigated a ship? Have we flown a ship? Have we had our hands on the controls? Have we had a piece of technology in our hands? Have we operated it? Do we know anything about weaponry? You know, this kind of thing. And also what's happened to us medically. The things that the aliens have done to us medically, it seems that these government ops for, you know, for simplification here, that they're interested in what's happened to us medically. What is it about us that the aliens are interested in genetically? And can they duplicate that genetics? Can they learn from it? And so they have that medical genetic interest in us. Another big part of the whole alien abduction scenario is a paranormal component, a side component, that component of being able to manipulate matter with your mind, of
right.
being the telepathy. And then, so the military guys are also saying, hey, what's that? Has that ability in you been enhanced?
Do they seem to monitor these people beyond just a one- or two-time visit or apprehension?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Do you want to address that, Joe?
Well, I was just thinking about it because something recent that was brought to my attention in the last 2 years, and thanks to people like Katarina Wilson and Jim Sparks and Suzanne Anson and a few other contactees we work with, where I know you're familiar with a lot of these cases, you'll notice there's quite a bit of military involvement in their lives, and it seems to be quite frequent and quite regular. And for the more advanced contactees, it seems to be even more in depth, and they seem to, you know, drag more out of them. They want more out of them. They're trying to get more information out of them. And I guess because these people are fully and functionally aware of their contact, most of what goes on in their contact, that these are excellent candidates for the government. These are people they can pick up on a regular basis. As soon as they know they've been picked up, they'll usually get them within 24 hours, and they'll sit there and they'll work them through. I've actually had contactees tell me sometimes that the abduction itself is easier than the military abduction.
The men in black that we've heard so much about over the years, do you think these folks are part of the covert plan?
Well, there's definitely some crossover there. With the men in black, I think, are predominantly two things, just for simplification here. One is they could be these government operatives. And so when people describe a men in black to me, are they more or less describing somebody human who just happens to be in a suit, you know, this kind of thing? And are they being warned? Are they coming to their door, their place of work, whatever, and approaching them and warning them, which I have many cases of that in my research? Or are they saying something that looks otherworldly, something that maybe where the skin color isn't right, the eye color isn't right, they have strange mannerisms, they seem to be demonstrating paranormal things? I think there may be an alien or a hybrid component to that as well. Both kinds of cases are prevalent, and so I think it just suggests that both kinds of events are happening. One involves something alien. Now, because you're seeing a hybrid involved in this, is that hybrid operating on behalf of these government covert types, you know, possibly? Or are they operating on behalf of the alien? I mean, we don't know. It's the same kind of activity usually. It usually involves a threat and a warning and, you know, being instructed to keep away from a particular subject or investigating a particular aspect. That seems to be usually what happens in the Men in Black scenario.
How soon after someone's been abducted and he's gone through or she's gone through that incredible event, how soon do you think they get contacted by the covert folks?
Well, and Joe just mentioned this, that sometimes it's right after the experience. Not always. It can be unrelated to the experience.
Could it be a year later?
After. I mean, let me give one story, one case as an example of immediately after. Leah Haley, well-known abductee, wrote about this. I believe she's even been on your show.
Yes.
Leah Haley had an experience where she had an alien abduction. She was taken from her home in her nightgown. She was left standing in a field. Okay, left in an open field.
Yep.
A black helicopter came up, landed, guys in camouflage got out, escorted her at gunpoint onto the helicopter, flew her to a base, and interrogated her about her experience. And so that was, they knew that she had been dropped off. In fact, it even suggests that in that particular incident, the aliens dropped her off in the field for the government guys to then pick her
up. Yeah, almost like they knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so,
obviously.
I mean, that's kind of a severe example of immediately right after. Sometimes it's happened, as Joe just suggested, within 48 or 72 hours, the next day or the day after that. So these both kinds of scenarios are prevalent. And then there are some scenarios where it's unrelated. It may be a period of time after the experience. Quite often, if the abductee is going public or starting to, if they're starting to investigate the being public, whether they're writing or doing interviews or, you know, speaking, whatever, that sometimes brings it on, where when you first start the public thing, the activity can increase, and it's more related to the fact you're going public than it is to the fact that you've just had an alien experience.
I don't know what frightens these people more, the alien experience or the covert experience.
Well, most of them say the covert experience does, but
that's one thing I hear unanimously from the people who have had this experience. Everyone, and I don't have to ask it when I do the interviews or the investigations. I don't have to bring it up. It automatically comes up where they say, you know what, these military experiences are a lot worse than my alien ones.
Jeez. Now, has anybody been reportedly hurt by the covert folks?
Actually, there's not. Well, I have to let Melinda ask this because I don't know all of her cases, but all the cases I have, I've had people beat up, harassed, roughed up, tossed around,
threatened,
wife, children, stuff like that, separated. But also, I have noticed, too, with the contactees, a lot of times it has more to do with what the government's looking for from the contactee, how their experience is going to happen. If they're looking for, like, physical evidence, it's going to be quick. It'll usually be 24, 48, 72 hours, somewhere in there. And like Melinda just said, when they're going public, sometimes it'll be later on. But it really depends on what that group is looking for from that contactee is going to determine when that contactee is being picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how they do it. I mean, they have, from what I understand from all the ones we interviewed, they seem to have a purpose for each one of these. They all seem to be wanting something particular or trying to find something particular. I mean, they're always looking for information.
Are they trying to put together like a puzzle?
Yeah.
Well, and I can address
it.
There's four things. Now, Joe, I don't know if you'll agree or disagree. Right. But by the way, I disagreed with everything you said. But there are four things that come up consistently in my case.
All right, let's talk about those, Melinda, when we come right back. We're going to take this very quick break with our two guests tonight, Melinda Leslie, Joe Montaldo. Their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. We'll be right back. And we're with Melinda Leslie, Joe Montaldo. We're going to chat with them about some of their respective projects and what they're working on. Melinda, you mentioned there were four things.
Well, there's four things that it seems that the people, you know, perpetrating this who have an interest in the monitoring and the re-abducting abductees, that they're interested in based upon what the abductees are reporting. And I'm getting these four things consistently, sometimes more one than the other, but pretty much equal amounts of all four.
Okay.
One is they have an interest in ET motives, you know, ET agenda, why are they here?
Almost like they don't know what they are, so they're pushing the abductee for it.
Well, I think they have some knowledge of it, that they have some information. They're wanting to know if the abductee has anything else to offer, or is the abductee's experience match what they think they know.
Okay.
So I think it can be both verification and information. And the other is ET genetics. Like I said, this whole medical component to these experiences, that they have an interest in the ET genetics. There's a few cases. They're fairly rare. You've probably heard of the missing fetus syndrome. Well, that's happened in some of these military experiences as well, besides in the alien experiences of someone being pregnant, have an alien abduction, then they're not. That same thing has happened in the military experience.
Okay.
The other is ET technology. That's a big one. Everything from what you know about the craft, its mechanisms, to have you flown it, have you navigated it, what have you seen. And then fourth, and again equally with the others, is the abductee's psi abilities. Do they remote view?
Mm-hmm.
How do they do the telepathy? Are they able to manipulate matter with their mind? Do what's called psychokinesis? And these kinds of things, and the testing the abductees for these abilities. So some abductees, like you could have the reabduction, have an experience where you're just tested for psi, or you could have a reabduction that's just about medical, or you could have a reabduction where it's just the interrogation about the technology, or it could be a combination thereof. But all these kinds of things come up fairly consistently.
Do they hypnotize the abductee? Do they have to?
Sometimes hypnosis is used. There's a lot of drugging, a lot of what would otherwise be called mind control techniques that people who've researched mind control would certainly understand. A researcher by the name of Helmut Lammer wrote a book about MyLab called Military and Alien Abduction and Mind Control.
And he's a PhD, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, okay.
And in his book about it, he addressed it from that mind control issue quite heavily. Unfortunately, it's a very prevalent part of the experience, where how they conduct the experience, how they take you, how they get you to forget about it, uses all these various mind control techniques, which are predominantly based upon drugs and induced fear.
Doesn't Dr. Lammer also believe that some of these people are being implanted with chips?
Yes, and that's one thing that some of the abductees report. For instance, Debbie Jordan, a very well-known abductee and one of Bud Hopkins' star cases. Debbie Jordan had an experience where she believed she was taken, had an alien implant removed by these military ops, and then the military ops put in another implant of their own. So she had an alien one removed and a military one put in. And a couple of people have reported that. More people have reported that alien implants have been removed than having a military one put in, thank God.
Interesting. I wonder if Dr. Lear has been taking out those military implants as well.
Roger's a dear friend of mine. We've talked about this quite a bit. I hope he's probably listening. Roger's not come across anything that seems to be known, I'm putting my fingers up in the air like quotes, known
right.
Technology,
yeah.
You know, it all seems
biological technologic organisms,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. So far it's all been very anomalous and nothing that points to something known, you know, something with, you know, something that you could identify as human.
Let's go through these four steps for a moment, Melinda, and you, Joe, as well. What do most of the abductees say then about the ET motive? Generally, what do they say is going on?
Joe, you want to address that?
I don't know if I want to talk about aliens.
Come on, Joe, you stuck your neck out.
This gets real sticky, real hairy, real fast. Well, first off, you got to determine which species we're going to talk about. I mean,
all right, that's a good point.
Yeah, we investigate three species at ICAR mainly. There's a bunch of stuff we get involved with. But for us, it's the humans, the reptilians, and the grays. The grays seem to have, how can I say this without getting myself in trouble? They seem to have motives that seem to border all the way across the board. In other words, the reptilians and humans seem to be doing their own thing in their own projects, whereas the grays seem to cover both sides. And the reason I say that is in some of the MILAB cases we have, grays are present. Even though this is a human abduction, the grays are present. So there's something else going on here that we're not quite sure about, because we have the grays in here, we have the humans in here, we have the military black ops in here doing their thing, but they all seem to be together in the same little fish pond,
yeah,
doing the same
some
little
kind
thing.
Of working relationship here.
And occasionally you will even hear about a reptilian being present. Now, as far as the human aliens, I don't know, because They got this one guy they described to us, George. They say he's 6 to 7 foot tall, kind of reddish hair. Sometimes he's in green scrubs. Sometimes he's not. Sometimes his hair is curly. Sometimes it's not. Now, I've got probably 175, 180 descriptions of this guy from different mill labs.
And you think it's the same person, the same entity?
It's tough. Now, anybody listening to us tonight, if y'all have had this experience, please write to Melinda and myself, because we're trying to find out. It sounds like he's human in most cases, but then some cases, George, it sounds like he's a mill lab. I mean, not a mill lab, a hybrid.
Okay.
Because they say he kind of moves weird, and he's kind of out of sync with the thing.
And there could be 500 of them that all look the same, right?
And that's the thing, there could be. And see, there's just no way for us to know this, because, like I said, the descriptions are subtle differences. Like, sometimes his hair is... It's always short, but sometimes it's red and it's just kind of flat like normal, and then sometimes it's curly or wavy, and it drives me crazy is what it
is. I'll add here that in my own experience, I know we haven't addressed that really, but what got me started in this was my own experiences with it. I had a very severe interrogation about technology with this tall red-haired guy, and I've had a couple other cases report him, and usually he's involved in the interrogation or threatening kind of scene where there's either threats or an interrogation going on. And
so he's not Mr. Nice Guy.
Again, in my experience and some of the experiences that have been reported to me, he is a military person of fairly high rank. He's there in some kind of position of authority, and he does use a lot of fear and pretty harsh treatment.
All right.
To belittle the abject teen, get a response from them, and that's kind of his MO. Now, Joe, you can go on here because I know you've got cases that have a few other things come up with him.
Well, that's true. Like our Eglin Group cases, we call it, which is Eglin Air Force Base in the Panhandle of Pensacola, which is where Leah Haley had a lot of her experiences at, and several of our other friends, but. Down there, he seems to be present. Now, I have to agree with what Melinda's saying. He always seems to be intimidating. But what bothers me about him is sometimes it seems to be a physical like intimidation where he's shaking, or telling, or pointing, or hollering. But then sometimes the contactee say he just turns around and looks, or even just turns his head, and you can feel the fear rush across your body, which suggests some kind of telepathy of some kind.
Yeah.
Now, it still could be human, but sometimes they describe the eyes a little weird. Now, what bothers me about this is because, when I first talked this about Melinda 5 or 6 years ago, she was telling me about her experience. And I started putting two and two together. We have him sometimes they're doing interrogations now. In Eglin, he always seems to be in green scrubs and part of the medical procedures that are going on. I'll give you an example. I've had this at least 75 times in Eglin. There's a room. In the room, there seems to be this, it looks like a stainless steel circle. And on the circle, there's 12 chairs. And each chair's got a set of stirrups on it. And it's where they bring the women in for examinations. Well, during this time, the military's doing their thing. He's walking around the whole time. Now, I honestly got to say, in these cases, I've never heard a woman say he put his hands on them. But they say as soon as he gets near him, it's just instant fear. And whatever anyone says, they just do.
Bad vibes from this guy.
Yeah, so, like I said, that's what makes me think maybe hybrid, maybe human, maybe advanced human. I don't know, but... Something up in there bothers me because, now it's getting 175 descriptions.
Of the same thing.
Of the same guy. Now, like I said, he's not always in green scrubs. Sometimes he's in a uniform. Sometimes he's in a suit. But he's almost, they say he's broad-shouldered, big guy, tall guy.
And are these all around the country?
All around the world.
Okay. So, but are these abductees... Are they taken just to Pensacola or to all kinds of places?
No, there seems to be a whole host of facilities.
Yeah, all kinds of places. Now, Joe's East Coast, basically. He's there in Louisiana and, East Coast. And I'm in California. Granted, just, because of where we are, his cases, he probably, stop me if I'm wrong, Joe, but you get more cases that are East Coast, and I get more cases that are West Coast.
Sure.
So my West Coast cases are being taken to West Coast
facilities.
Military bases.
Okay.
And of course, quite a few out to the what's considered Area 51.
I was just going to ask you that. So you have had some of these abductees say they were taken there. Okay.
Quite a few. In fact, I know, I have worked with and know of a bunch of cases in the Vegas area. it's a hotbed for this kind of activity. And of course, most of those people are taken to that area or the surrounding, you know, bases associated with it. In California, if they're in San Diego, they tend to get taken to some of the San Diego bases. In the greater LA area, we have a lot of people going out to the China Lake area. These things come up repeatedly. Sometimes, most of the time, abductees don't know where they're taken, but occasionally they're able to either see something that they're able to later talk to a researcher and have verified or something. A number of insiders have come forward and have verified people's experiences and said this is where people are being taken, this kind of thing.
Well, have you two been able to pinpoint then what the motive is? I mean, why are they doing this? And I'm talking about the aliens first.
Where are we going to start with this?
Because
most people, when they hear us talk about alien abductions, they think, the last 40 or 50 years. They don't understand this is 6,000-plus-year phenomena going on here. And if you start looking at it, I mean, first of it, definitely part of what they're doing is some kind of enhancement of the human race. I mean, if you go back 6,000 years and you think, even if they only took a handful of people, 100, 150 people, today, that's got to be a full 20, 25% of the population. I'm not saying they're messing with them all, but that should have had something done because of their family line.
Are they trying to make us better humans?
Well, I can tell you this. Now, this is from my own personal research and ICAR's research. We have never had a contactee or an abductee that's not empathic. All of them are empathic. Almost all of them are telepathic. But all of them are empathic.
It's kind of a joke in the abduction community amongst abductees, which came first, the psychic or the abductee, was being psychic, empathic, intuitive, have something to do with your having experiences,
or is it
a byproduct of your experiences? And I think the answer that probably most everyone would agree to is it's both. It has something to do with probably your genetic background and them having an interest in you, and certainly a byproduct of the experiences is those are enhanced just as via having the experience they're enhanced because of the telepathy and the spatial differences and the time things. But also, it seems that in some cases, the abductees deliberately enhance them as well. I mean, the aliens, I should say, deliberately enhance them.
They do seem to do that. And then you have the breeding programs, which all three seem to be run.
Yes.
There's hybrid programs in all three of the major races.
And I think that's the simple answer to your question. And I know, you know, we're in alignment with the abduction community at large here is even though a variety of things happen in abductions, there are some common threads that are not always there, but they're consistently in high enough numbers to say that they're the most significant thing.
Yeah.
And one of those is this breeding program, the taking of sperm and eggs and the production of hybrids and the presentation of hybrid children to the abductees. I mean, this is something that is so consistently in abduction reports. If you look at just statistically, the numbers are huge for the amounts of this going on.
But what do they do with the hybrids when they've grown? Do they bring them back to the planet here, or do they take them to other places?
They have to be taking them somewhere else.
Yeah, there is some research to now suggest, and certainly Bud Hopkins and Dave Jacobs. Hello?
Yeah.
I thought I lost someone.
Okay.
There is some research to suggest that that a lot of them are coming back here now, and there's quite a few researchers talking about that and writing about that to suggest that some of them are here. But granted, as many as are seen, it certainly suggests that the majority of them are somewhere else.
And they seem, though, to be, these hybrids, enlightened. They seem to be gentle. There doesn't seem to be any being prone to violence, I would think, right?
Well, it depends. Now, if you go back to the Men in Black, especially back in the 50s and 60s, those were supposedly hybrids, and they were quite brutal. So I guess it depends on where you want to look. I mean, most of the people, when the parents meet them, there's never any kind of hostility there, at least none that I've heard of. And I can't rule out there might be some, but as far as the hybrid's interaction with other contactees, it usually doesn't happen. They usually keep it within the family. In other words, when they introduce you to a hybrid, it's usually someone you're related to. So there doesn't seem to be that need to hurt you, I guess.
But I think it's important here to also bring up, while the hybrid program is big and it's consistent, it's there, it's not the only one. There are other things going on. Certainly another thing that comes up very consistently, and this could probably be seen as benign, you know, or a good thing, which is that people are often given views of the destruction of the planet and environmental catastrophes and this kind of thing, and they're made very socially and consciously aware of that, and some abductees become activists and stuff as a byproduct of their experience.
I was going to say, do they expect these abductees to change the planet?
Good question. That it certainly causes that awakening in the abductees, but whether they expect the abductees alone to do something, maybe it's more like give the abductees an idea that they'll share with other people, and that idea will grow and take on. Truth is that, a lot of this we can speculate, and the truth is we don't know.
Yeah, what bothers me about this is a full one-third of our contactees talk about an off-world colony. And what really is good about this is they give, identical descriptions. I've probably had a couple of hundred of them draw them out for me. They're drawn the same place.
And that's incredible.
We haven't even published it yet. I mean, it'll get published. Matter of fact, it'll come out this December or January.
Okay. So,
it amazes me, but I'm not sure what it means now, because it worries me in the fact that here you have a third of the contactees seem to be fully and functionally aware of this colony. A lot of them say they've been there. And when they start talking, they're always talking about, well, eventually we'll be living there. So I'm more worried about the other two-thirds of us left behind on the planet. If this is a prelude to something that may be coming that we don't know about, and they want to keep the species, or maybe they're developing their own species for a whole other reason.
Well, if they know what's going to happen at CERN soon, they probably know that the planet could get eaten by a black hole. You know, who knows?
And what I did mention in the MyLab Rehab experience that a lot of the abductees are being asked about motives and agendas of the aliens, that the abductees usually report back to me that when they're asked this, they have to look these guys point blank in the face and say, I don't know. usually they get asked and questioned, did the aliens show you? Did they tell you? Did they depart knowledge to you? And except for some very rare incidences, usually the abductees do not know the answer to that question. But yet it seems that these military guys continue to ask it.
With these covert types, does there appear to be a concern of time? Do they act like where they're running out of time and they need answers fast?
Yes, very much so.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I find that to be fascinating.
Well, yeah, very much
something's
so.
Happening there.
It seems like there's a real press for the information, and to the point where this now, whether some things that may happen in the experience may be kind of an act put on, like where they act aggressive or they yell at the abductee to get the abductee to respond or to install a state of fear that is part of the mind control procedure, but it seems that they aggressively ask this, like, you must tell us. We must know. We have to know this. It's important.
And we need to know it now.
And we need to know it now. I mean, and this is part of the anger stuff that's thrown at them. Now, does that mean they have a real need to know, or is that just their way of getting information from the addictee by making them afraid?
Good point. Who knows, right?
Manipulating them through fear. But,
All right. Stay with both of us. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Let's talk a little bit about alien technology as well. Fascinating. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Melinda and Joe, we touched on ET genetics where, we don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're making these hybrids for this planet or other planets. But let's talk about ET technology as well, Melinda and Joe. What do most of the abductees describe?
Oh, now, that's a tough one because, like I said, that goes into different aliens and different...
So there's different kind of craft for the different kind of alien?
You get different types of craft. For us, what we've documented over the last 20 years is, for the grays mainly, it tends to be a typical saucer-type craft. The reptilians seem to be what we like to call an elongated saucer, like someone grabbed a saucer and stretched it on both ends. And the humans tend to, if you ever hear about those big black triangles flying around.
They're all over the place, we hear.
Yeah. Those tend to be the human-type aliens. That's coming mainly from contactees, and the reports stay pretty consistent there. Now, in most cases, what's funny, too, about MILAB cases, a lot of the MILAB cases I get, the person is picked up, brought to a location, and has no idea how they were picked up or how they got to the location. Not always. but in a lot of the cases, they don't even seem to have any doubt. So, you know, for me, I've always wondered, were they gassing them in the car or something along those
lines? You know, if I can add to that, because this is one of those places where Joe and I might disagree a little bit, is in my cases, people do tend to know how they were picked up and how they were brought back. And granted, I've not worked with nearly as many cases by any means. I, you know, with like 40 people in depth, and Joe's worked with hundreds.
Well, what do they describe, Belinda? Do they talk about a propulsion system, for example?
Well, okay, there's two different things. One is there's the alien technology, and then there's what they see with the military. What they see with the military, for instance, abductees may be picked up and flown on some kind of advanced technology that the military has done. Myself, from one of my experiences, I was flown on a large triangular craft. That was a human-built craft that I think had a bunch of alien technology.
Hey, when you say large, how big? What do you think?
Football field size? At one point, I was laying on a stretcher on the ground next to it and got to look up at it from laying on the ground. And from that angle and looking along the side of it, maybe from, you know, like point to point along the side, 150 feet.
Okay.
Like that.
So not 3 miles long.
No, not that big. No.
Okay.
No, not that big. And then some people, when they have these military experiences, if they're taken to an underground base, they may see technology. Quite often, they see what they describe as parked UFOs. They can see everything from a couple of them in a row to just one by itself. These are usually reported as discs, and probably not ours, you know, and are seen sitting there. So this is the kind of stuff, all sorts of stuff is seen in these military experiences. And then the alien experiences, of course, abductees get picked up using a variety of technology, predominantly taken aboard different types of ships, as Joe just described, and others, quite often things that are disc or disc-like in shape. And then a lot of abductees don't remember seeing the craft, but they remember floating up in the beam. So a lot of, obviously, anti-gravity kind of technology that's directed, things that float them around the house, beams of light that float them, balls of light, and sounds, different wave vibration kinds of things are always experienced with the alien experiences. And then on board, the abductee might, you know, I think of Jim Sparks right away, sitting down at a computer, operating
right.
Controls. This is actually fairly common, this sitting down, operating controls, a control panel. They may be instructed that they're flying the ship. They may be instructed that they're directing the beam technology. All this kind of stuff is reported, that they're flying it, that they're navigating it. A lot of times the aliens want the abductee to use their mind quite a bit in the procedure, that there's a direct mental interface with the technology where the mind and the technology work together.
Is it your impressions, both of you, that most of these cases are physical, planetary, as opposed to dimensional or some parallel universe?
That's a really tough one. I'd have to say the majority of the ones I work with I would consider to be terrestrial, as meaning in our galaxy. But there's some description of what people like to call the light beams and a few others that really sound more dimensional.
Could be.
Okay.
I'll just add to that I agree with Joe, that it seems like most of the alien experiences that are reported as physical in nature. I mean, you're talking about the whole mechanism of the person having experience and remembering it, the idea that someone might be able to better recall a very physical experience than something more interdimensional and able to label it and say what it is. Although people have these interdimensional experiences as well, certainly those are there. In my own research, I tend to focus on the cases that have the more physical experiences. Because the people with the more physical experiences are also the people that are more likely to have the MyLab scenario.
Are these covert folks just, is the group just part of, let's say, this country, and they travel around the world, or do various countries have their own groups?
See, George, I'd have to say that various countries have their own groups, but somehow these guys are hooking up together.
They're all part of the plan.
Because I have MILAB cases out of France and out of the UK, and they do not describe Americans. I mean, they usually have British accents or they're speaking French, so that's, you know, unless it just happens to be an American with a British accent or American speaking French. But most of the people in these cases would consider this their own government. But, you know, we have MILABs, and we have cases that seem to cross back and forth, like people who have been overseas or been over here that have been picked up. So somehow or another, these agencies somehow are working together. I couldn't tell you how or what's going on. Now, I haven't heard of any outside of what I would call the allied nations of the United States. That doesn't mean there isn't any. It's just I haven't heard of any.
Well, there are some cases of this, for instance, that I've heard about in Brazil and some in Russia. And again, they usually speak whatever, you know, the local languages, although in the few international cases I have, the people have report, for instance, if it's an American person who's traveling in that country and has one of these experiences, there tends to be American military personnel present. And so it seems like I can't say I've got enough cases in this to say it's one or the other, but it seems like if you're an American, you have experiences with Americans.
Right.
And if not, or like, for instance, I am aware of at least two cases from England. And in those cases, these people were English. And yes, there were English present, but there were also Americans present in those experiences.
Well, at any point, is the propulsion system described to these people who have been abducted?
Well, a lot of contactees get it, but we would consider advanced information on propulsion.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, though, George, there seems to, and I know the government's doing the exact same thing ICAR is doing. Each contactee is one piece of the puzzle. So the more you can get your hands on, the more pieces of the puzzle
exactly. You
can get. So I know that's what they're doing, you know, and they're pre-programmed like we do. I mean, we take contactees either through hypnosis or through, or just reinforcing certain things. Before they go to bed at night, we'll have them think of particular things, or if they're driving to work, we'll have them think of particular things. That way, if they are picked up by an alien, it's reflex. Their mind, as soon as they touch the alien's mind, the question is asked. A lot of times, the Greys and reptilians will ask without thinking about it. Now, sometimes there's punishment for that, by the way, but a lot of times they will answer the question before they think about it. Well, the government's doing basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're pre-programming contactees to try to obtain information.
Exactly.
I'm just curious on how they're tracking them as closely as they are, because some of these contactees, they seem to know, I mean, everything, what they're doing, where they are. I've had contactees call me up or MILABs call me up and say, Joe, they just called me and told me what I was wearing, what I was doing, where I was driving, where I was going.
Yeah.
You know, and this is really advanced surveillance.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, some of the abductees, for instance, one case I've worked with quite a bit, she was told in a scenario where she went on a blind date with someone and the guy showed up in military uniform, and it was kind of a threatening situation where he was warning her off the subject, and he said, I want you to drop it and pull out the field. And in this very threatening warning situation, he went on to describe her two sons and where they live, and in great detail their day-to-day life. You know, they get up here, they go to work, this is where they go, this is what, you know. And in other words, her sons had been monitored totally unknown to them at very close range and over a period of time, enough where this guy was able to give this kind of detail, suggesting that they had access to her sons at any given moment. And he said, you know, drop out or your sons will be hurt. Well, you know, that...
Yeah, that's pretty much a given there.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of thing comes up. Another case I've worked with... had an insider that she went to work with for a while. This insider owed her some money, long story short, on some back pay.
Okay.
And she tried to make an issue of it with him, and he proceeded to tell her details of her own military reabduction experience, suggesting that he had, you know, either firsthand knowledge or had read a report or something of her experience. And he said, no, you won't pursue this. You won't take legal action, because if you do, I'll make this information known or prove you to be a fraud or what, you know, whatever. and used that as a threat to her by suggesting that he had inside detail knowledge of one of her experiences. Of course, it scared the you-know-what out of her.
Of course.
You know, to backtrack on y'all a little bit, I got to thinking about something you had asked a little while ago. When we were going over around 2005, the late part of 2004 to early part of 2005, the MILAV cases we had start coming in around that time, they increased probably, I don't know, 10, 15-fold of people coming forward. I don't know if there was actually any more going on, but so many more people came forward. There seemed to be a much larger sense of urgency in these new cases coming up than there was in a lot of my previous cases. And since then, it seems to be consistent. So there does seem to be, at least since the turn of the last century, much deeper interest.
It seems like they're running against a clock, Joe.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Which bothers me because, you know, if the government's all worried about, oh, wait, we're running tight on time here, what is it that we're expecting?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel the same way, which is one of the reasons that we're out talking about this, is the need to kind of bring this to the attention. And if I can say a little bit more about that real quick here,
sure.
I think it's really important for the audience to understand. Joe and my doing this, you know, I know a lot of this sounds pretty scary, and it's not about making people afraid of abductions or you know, or afraid to go public or anything like that. It's twofold. One is we're doing it to help experiencers out there, people who've had these experiences, so they'll know they're not alone. If you have had these kinds of things, if you've had the harassment, surveillance, or the interrogation, you know, you're not alone. It does happen to quite a few people. And to encourage those people to be public about their experiences, and you know, and then also him and I both feel very strongly that this is some of the strongest evidence in support of the alien abduction scenario. I mean, if you kind of think about it, alien abductions, all the researchers have many cases. Some researchers have as many as like 1200 cases. I think of like Bud Hawkins and Dave Jacobs and you know, John Carpenter, you know, and these, they have 500, 600, 7, 8, 9, you know, 1,200 cases apiece. And then that some Roper polls were done, some Roper poll studies, very scientifically done, that deduced, it's kind of long explanation how it happened, but they deduced in both incidences that there were over 3 million, in some cases over 4 million abductees possibly in the continental U.S. alone. These are high numbers, to say the least. Anything happening this covertly as alien abduction to that many people would have to be of interest to someone in the intelligence community. Combined with, if you take crash retrievals, of which there's 47, 50, whatever, you know, whatever the number is of documented crash retrievals, even if you narrow that down to the, you know, to the strongest cases, you're still talking quite a few. And then the reverse engineering of that, all the insiders that have come out, certainly, you know, Colonel Corso, and I could list a whole bunch of people, all the people that have disclosed to Stephen Greer and et cetera. But you go with all these reports of the insiders and the crash retrievals and the amount of research done there, the documentation that's come out, and you take that all into consideration with the number of abduction cases, and certainly the guys in the cabal who are managing this information, who are doing the information management and the control and the reverse engineering and are looking at it close hand and are running the underground bases, they would have to have an interest in the abduction accounts based upon the abductees being another source of information that helps them get a better handle on the situation. In fact, it would be a complete dereliction of duty if they weren't interested. And so it makes complete sense that these cases exist. And to us, it's some of the strongest evidence in support of the fact that not only are the alien abductions very real and happening to a lot of people, but they're so real and they're so significant, they've become a matter of national security. Enough to where these guys are spending the time, energy, and ultimately money,
lots of money,
black ops projects to monitor this.
What if this is leading into 2012 for some reason?
You know, I have contactees speculate on that all the time. I can honestly say I don't have any firm evidence to suggest that, but I do have evidence to suggest that there's something coming. You know, you heard me say a full third of our contactees have colony dreams.
Right.
Well, there's another third of them that have what we call the Holocaust dream. And what's really eerie about this dream is it doesn't matter what contactee you talk to, they describe these pretty closely. Like one lady was telling me they were going through Houston. And please, people in Houston, don't write me, but they said they were going through Houston, And they had seen just piles and piles of bodies being burned by the government.
Okay.
Now, I have to say, in all these cases, they said they did not see any physical damage to the cities other than, you know, like out-of-control fires and stuff, but no bombing damage or stuff like that. And most of them describe what I would deduce as some type of disease that ran rampant across the planet in under 7 days. And it's very eerie, it's very weird, and it's very strange that we have, you know, well, we're up, thanks to you, matter of fact, from our last appearance on Coast to Coast, we're probably up to about 9,300 contactees now. And, you know,
that's fantastic.
A third of them are telling us that they're having this dream.
Isn't that weird?
And it, you know, it would be one thing if, you know, a lot of this had been made public already, and but most of it hasn't. And when they start describing these places and these cities and these bodies and storefronts, and it just really weirds me out because the descriptions are identical. They're talking about the same thing. They're talking about walking in these groups. And actually, a lot of them are talking about walking in groups to get to a specific destination so they can be picked up. And it's a very strange thing, and it's very weird. And when you take that together with the one-third that are talking about the colony, it just worries me. It doesn't prove anything, mind you, but it worries me.
Well, based on all these abductees and this high percent that they claim that these covert folks are showing up, can you make the assumption at this point that there's a need-to-know, urgent basis to get this information out of abductees, whatever they're trying to get?
I would say there was. What do you think, Melinda?
Yeah. I mean, there is a sense of urgency there. The cases are increasing, and Joe can probably attest this. They're not going away. We're getting more of them.
Yeah, we're getting more of them.
Of course, it's also, you know, as the information gets more known and more people write about their experiences, this kind of thing, more people are coming forward saying, yeah, I have had that. But still, it seems to be, you know, definitely seems to be increasing. And definitely some sense of urgency on the part of the you know, people perpetrating this. I think they have some real answers. I think they're trying to develop the technology as fast as they can. I think there's, you know, why I think they've gotten it so far. I think we do, you know, we have craft that we've built, human craft. But I don't think it's as far along as they want it to be. I think there's a whole component of it that I talked about earlier, this mental interface component that I don't think they've mastered, and I think they're really trying to get a grip on.
And if we built them, was it reversed engineered technology? We'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Joe and Melinda. Maybe you can share one of your stories with us. We'll be back. Melinda and Joe, let's talk about, you were saying, Melinda, that we may have our own craft?
Well, yes. That's something that the abductees report seeing in the experiences. It's also something true to my own experience. We have certainly triangles, lots of them, that we've built, and some disc technology. I think what it is, though, is, like I was starting to say, because of this mental component, this mind, this side component of the technology, I'm not sure that they've mastered that as far as long as they want to go. I think that's their primary interest in the abductees, is how are the abductees able to manipulate the technology with their mind? Because when the aliens have you manipulate the technology in some way as part of your abduction experience, it's usually a heavy mental or psi component to that. And I think that's one of the prime reasons that there is the interest in the abductees. And there may be a genetic component to our being able to do that as well, hence also why abductions, alien abductions, happen in genetic family lines and tends to run in families, tends to be following some kind of genetic pattern, certainly with the production of hybrids involved in that too. But I think that same thing may allow for this psi component, which I think is a big reason that these guys are interested in the abductees. I think that may be the unanswered question, the part they're trying to get a better handle of. I think they've, you know, actually, Bill Uhouse, an insider, talked about this, and Randy Kopang in his book Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure, mm-hmm. a book that he wrote in part about my research, he has a whole long interview in there with Bill Uhouse and then with his son. Bill Uhouse was an insider out at S4, Area 51, for, I think it was 28 years or something like that in the program, some long time. And he came out for a while. Now he's actually back in. That's another story. He's been pulled back in, but according to his son. But in his story, he talks about designing the flight simulators for training the pilots how to fly the craft. Well, that suggests, of course, that they're training pilots how to fly craft. That, in other words, craft being disc technology. And he designed the electrical systems for the flight simulators. I happen to think, and Randy and I do in our investigation, that he's a very reliable case and a true insider. But part of that is he once confirmed something about my own experience, and he also talks about in the flight simulator that the pilot's reaction time, that their ability to mentally think and respond and do things mentally in that environment far exceeded his own. He said these pilots had some kind of more advanced paranormal training to be able to do that. And I think that's the part that they're trying to master. It's like that's ultimately, I think, to have craft do the same things that the alien craft does, I think it takes that component. And again, obviously from Bill Uhouse's story, that suggests that they have some of that ability, that they've able to do that. But I think it's just a matter of they can always learn more. And so the abductees are just another source of information.
And let me find out from both of you, with you first here, Joe, why the UFO cover-up? It's obvious it's going on. It's obvious that they don't want us to know something. Why?
Well, that's a good question. Well, first, we've got social implications or religious and social implications. For half the planet, a lot of religions don't allow for life other than us. So they have to deal with that, which I think they can overcome. Of course, we have financial implications. We've also got the problems of we've been keeping technology from our allies and from our enemies and everybody else on the planet for the matter. So they got to deal with that. But there's a couple other things. One, here you have all these contactees. What happens if tomorrow George Bush decides to say, well, the aliens are visiting the planet and they're abducting people? Well, you just got 2, 3, 4, 5 million lawsuits just lined up. Because everybody who's been abducted is going to start suing the government. They're just going to. But I honestly think the government keeps this a secret. One is because they truly don't know the entire agenda of the aliens. At this point, they would be revealing this blindly. They only have bits and pieces. I think they have more technology than the researchers do, but as far as the actual pieces of the puzzle for what the aliens are actually, I don't think the government knows much more than we do. I really think that's one of the reasons they're pushing this so hard, because they really don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. And going back to something else, the Greys are strictly, all their ships are telepathic. Everything aboard is telepathic. They don't use any type of physical instrumentation, whereas the TRs are the black triangles, the T-series we like to call them, the different size black triangles, which range anywhere from 30 feet across to about 200 feet across. That's how you know they're eyes, because anything over 200 feet is probably not ours. It's probably one of the other aliens.
Okay,
I don't think we possess those technologies yet. But those crafts are more a technology, more terrestrial-based technology. They're still using levers, buttons, knobs, things along those lines. Even though there is a telepathic part to them, it's just the telepaths we have are just not as good as what the Greys can do. We just don't have that level of control yet. And Melinda's right when she's saying that that's one of the things the government's looking for. They're trying to figure out why the contactees' telepathy level is so much higher than the average everyday person. And some of these they can get answers for. Some of these they may even turn to use themselves. We have contactees that work with the aliens all the time. People forget we have MILADs that work with the government. They've actually just kind of gone over, for a lack of a better way of explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have this faction in there as well. So the government has a vested interest in keeping this a secret for the simple fact that if they go public right now, they don't know what they're opening up. Because in the end, no one really knows what the last final thing of the agenda is going to be. And since the aliens have been here 6, 7, 10,000 years or more, our government, or for that matter, any government, I don't think is willing to put their head on the block and say, well, they're here, they're not really doing anything. Yeah, they are abducting people, but they're not really trying to hurt them. And look, they're putting y'all back, and they're not really doing anything bad. You don't remember anything. But they can't tell you why it is that Gray is abducting on the scale that they're doing. They have ideas. They really, truly don't know. And they're looking for the answers just like we are, because they're probably scared at this point.
And Melinda, your take on why no disclosure?
Well, on one part, I agree with him that certainly the abduction scenario is very problematic towards disclosure. And I think in the UFO community, as all these different groups are moving forward with the disclosure movement, that it's absolutely imperative that abductions be a part of that discussion, because this has to be addressed. Otherwise, we risk, as disclosure, let's say disclosure starts to happen, if this is not part of the discussion, it really gets risked that it's marginalized further, that the abductees get ridiculed further, you know, that they're put out as being somehow the enemy. You know, these things are of concern to me. So I think it's really important that it be included in the discussion. But I think the bottom line for the cover-up, I always say the bottom line is the bottom line. I think ultimately they're profiting from this. They're designing these technologies. Everyone's got their little part of the little piece of the Black Project pie. I think it's very compartmentalized. Each group is trying to defend their own budget. Everyone's playing CYA, cover their you-know-what.
Yeah,
and so I really think it has a lot to do with the fact that they're profiting off the technology. They're profiting off the keeping it a secret. I think there's huge black budgets that have been generated, and it's everyone trying to keep their budget going. The long answer, so that's the short ones, profiting. The long answer, I think, has a lot to do with this consciousness part I talked about, this what I call the mental interface with the technology. I think that there's a heavy consciousness aspect to interaction with the aliens. Any abductee can tell you this. Once you interact with the aliens, you know, everything changes. But your consciousness and the consciousness expansion and the telepathy with the aliens, certainly, like I said before, the remote viewing, the psychokinesis, all these aspects, I think that in that is a dormant human potential that I think the guys covering this up who have played with these technologies, these mental technologies, these products of the mind and this dormant human potential, they know that that potential is there, and I think it scares them. I think it scares them because it means a total loss of control of the current structure and system as we know it. And I think they know once that genie's out, you know, it's not coming back. And so I think there's a tremendous human potential that I think the loss of that means loss of control. Government exists to control, and when they lose that control, they cease to exist. So I think there's, in an effort to keep control, there's kind of a squelching of that unlimited human potential.
Melinda, Dr. Lamber theorizes that there is a possibility that all this information that we're getting from the abductees, mm-hmm. My labs, might be cover stories by a hypnoprogramming process of military psychiatrists. One, do you believe that's possible? And two, if you do, why would they do this?
No, and Joe can probably address this, too. In fact, Joe and I have had many discussions on this, and it's something that bugs us, and it bugs abduction researchers in general, this idea that all abductions are the military or that it's all some mind-controlled thing. It just doesn't fit with explaining the numbers of alien abductions, the evidence for alien abduction, the witnesses involved, so just the number of cases worldwide alone. There's no way that there's any covert military government group or organization perpetrating all that. It's just it's a financial and logistic impossibility. But on that, you know, here we've just had a whole show where we're talking about the fact they are involved. Yeah, they are involved, but they're involved because the alien abductions are real. It's because people are having the alien experiences that these guys are spending a dime on this. The only reason they care about someone, you know, and are monitoring them, surveillancing them, picking them up, interrogating them, is because, like we were saying and like you were suggesting, this idea that there's some kind of time program to get this information, and it's about the fact that there are really aliens present, and it's about the fact that these people are having real alien experiences. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, just it drives everyone crazy in this community, this idea. There's only a handful of researchers that have put that idea forward. A few of them I've talked to who put that idea forward of it all being the military, and those people even say, hey, it was only a theory.
Okay, so with Lammer's research, and he's done some good work, you don't agree with this part of it?
That it's all the military, or it's all... No,
That it's all pseudoscience?
That it's, no.
That these people are... That they are getting abducted by the military, but that they're being hypnotized to tell these stories?
No.
Okay. And Joe?
Well, I don't think that the government... Now, I can't say that they don't put out some disinformation, George. I got to say our government's famous for that. In general, you have too many contactees, first off, on the planet for the U.S. government to be doing it alone. It's just physically impossible. I can't see us abducting Chinese people out of China without starting World War III. And to be honest with you, if the government's mind control was that good, we wouldn't be worried about Russia right now. So that tells me the government's very limited in what they can really do. There's a lot of speculation, and there's a lot of people tell me, oh, they got all these advanced programs, but I have a firm policy. I judge everything by its actions. And if our government was that advanced, we wouldn't have near the enemies we have on the planet today, because we would already have been having them under mind control and making them do what we want. Well, we can see in the world's environment that that's not going on. So it tells me that even they are limited into how much they can actually do. And since they can't take MILADs for long periods of time, see, the aliens can do that. The Greys can take you and put you back. They can take you 3-4 weeks and put you back like it's one day. I mean, we get calls all the time when women wake up with 3-4 weeks worth of growth on their legs and just went to bed with shaved, clean legs. So we know that the Greys can do it, but the government doesn't have that ability. So they have a limited amount of time they can pick you up for before somebody notices that you're missing. So they really don't have the time to get into that kind of advanced program. They would need to keep you, current technology, it's probably 3, 4, 5 days to get you brainwashed enough where they could re-implant in a memory like that that would come out that a researcher with good hypnosis, because we use some really good hypnotherapists, including Yvonne Smith and a few others that do really good work, and they're just not finding this. So you can kind of rule that out simply for the fact that the other people doing hypnosis work aren't running into these blocked memories or covered memories. Not to say that there's not a jumble of memories in there from all kind of stuff. It's just, it doesn't seem like the government itself's trying. It really, to me, it seems like the government at this point is getting a little bit more desperate and they're trying to figure out what's going on here. It's almost like they're grasping at straws sometimes, because some of the stuff I hear I'm asking contactees, I have to wonder, you know, why are you asking these questions? You sound kind of desperate to me.
The last area of the interest of psi work, and that's the mind abilities. Why would they be interested, the military? Would they be interested in that area?
Well, look at it like this. The Marines ordered some Raptors. The new Raptors the Marines are ordering don't have a joystick in them. They're going to have these little diodes that hook to your head, and everything's going to be run that way. Now, that's not true telepathy, by the way, but it's close to what we have right now. So you know what your reaction time is going to quadruple without having to use that joystick. You just think the plane does what you want. So there's big advantages to being able to control your equipment through a telepathic means. Also, one of the other features is to it, like if you took an M1A1 tank in Iraq and you were standing in Baghdad, you could actually operate that tank from Baghdad and not actually be in the tank. So there's some big advantages to this kind of ability. It takes us out of harm's way. It allows us to operate equipment much faster all the way around the board. It makes us a much bigger enemy and threat to the whole world if they actually pull it off. Plus, the Greys, the type of technology the Greys are using, when Melinda was talking about Jim and the teacher thing is a common thing, by the way. A lot of contactees experience this where they're being taught to use equipment through telepathic means. Well, your reaction time and everything is so much faster that the government needs this technology. If we're going to stay ahead of the rest of the world and we're going to really not have to worry about countries like Russia and China, then we need technologies that puts us far, far ahead of them. And these kind of technologies do it. I mean, one pilot in a Raptor without a joystick is equivalent to 10 or 15 jets with pilots.
Can you imagine that? Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it puts everybody at a disadvantage and puts us at an advantage. It's to their advantage. And if we're talking about space travel, which I'm hoping this is where all this is going for our government, yeah, there's going to be big advantages telepathic communications and use of equipment. And then there's the things that the contactees describe where they can use an instrument telepathically. I'll give you an example. You can take an instrument, and it'll actually, by thinking, the instrument will actually carve out of something what you're thinking about. And then they've also got screens where the images of the person's thoughts will actually come in. So things that you're having a hard time remembering, you can actually put up on a view screen and review them out of your own head. All of these are things that would really advance the world beyond means that even we can think about. It might even take us into that golden age that the Mayans are talking about.
Melinda, how do people get a hold of you, first of all, through your website?
Sure. Well, right now, my website is Joe's website.
Okay.
And
which one? He's got a couple here. I've got a couple for Joe.
Okay. And also, people can get information about my research in again, the book that Randy Kopang wrote called Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure, Deconstructing Cover-Up of the Extraterrestrial Presence, subtitle. And that's Randy Kopang, K-O-P-P-A-N-G. And his book is available through a website, anw.com/RK/camo.
We better have Lex put that up on the website.
Yeah, anw.com/RK/camo. And then I'm speaking coming up at the end of the month with along with you at the Bay Area UFO Expo.
And that's right. It's coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah. It's
I better start packing.
Better start. September 27th and 28th at the Marriott in San Jose, California. And that website is www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And, and I have a message to quickly pass on to you, which is I spoke earlier this evening with Ed Grimsley.
Yes.
And he's a dear friend.
The night vision man.
The night vision who gave you your sighting.
That's right.
and he says he's going to be there at the Bay Area Expo with his night vision goggles.
Well, tell him I'm not buying him lunch.
Well, he says he's saving you a seat at the Skywatch.
Okay. I'm telling him I'm on a tight schedule. I may not be spending the night there this time.
Okay. Well, he says he's saving a seat at the Skywatch, but you have to bring the popcorn this time.
I love it. Okay. And, Joe, give us your two websites real quickly. Then we're going to take this break.
Okay. You can always find me at www.icar.com or ParanormalRadioNetwork.com. And if you need to write to me and you don't want to go to a website, it's icar@cox.net.
You got it. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls. And those of you who might have had these experiences, definitely call. It sure is. In this hour, we're going to take your phone calls for Melinda Leslie and Joe Montaldo. And also, though, if you have been abducted or perhaps you are one of these cases they're talking about, the My Labs picked up by a covert military, share that story with us as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, any insiders or whistleblowers who have talked to you or perhaps you, Melinda, about this strange situation?
Actually, I've had recently in the last 2 years, I've actually had a couple of insiders get in touch with me about the Millab cases. To be totally honest with you, let me tell you, this is kind of weird. I met a gentleman out of out of Pensacola, Florida.
Right.
He was in the military. He was stationed at Eglin Air Force Base, but he was just a grunt, just your everyday, you know, enlisted man. Nobody special, no officers, nothing covert. And he started having abduction experiences. And he got in touch with us over the abduction experience. And then about 6 months after he had started what I call the awakening, when he actually woke up to his abduction experiences, he started talking about a MILAB experience. Well, somewhere in the middle of this, one of the officers that was working with him actually called us to verify what he was saying. He told us who he was, what branch of service he was in, where he was stationed at. Which I found interesting. He was not stationed at Eglin, by the way. And I found that really interesting. But everything he said checked out to be exactly who he said he was. He called to verify what the guy told me, 100%. He went through it in great detail. He told me a few things that the gentleman had left out in his initial reports, which I found interesting. But he actually got into quite a detail about it. He's a full bird colonel in the U.S. Air Force is what he is. And it was interesting for this gentleman just to call us to confirm this. And since then, we have had several, probably four or five people in the last few years, and I just find it interesting that all of a sudden we've had this much forward action. Now, I know Melinda's been dealing with this a little longer than I have the MILAB things, but I just find it real interesting that all of a sudden in these last 2 years, we've got people confirming, people saying this is what's going on, this is why it's going on, these are some of the things you can expect out of the blue. Because before, right. I got to be honest with you, the 8 or 9 years before that I was checking in the MILABs, maybe had one person that contacted me.
That's growing too, then.
Yeah. So, you know, that was just something. And then, because of the coast-to-coast interview, I had a gentleman today. I'm not going to get into too much detail.
Which we did back in Feb, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That one. But this one here we're talking about tonight, somebody's seen us, Melinda and I, on the show list, contacted me today from Boeing, sent me all kind of information on
really?
What he was doing, parts of the projects that they were involved with the Mill Labs and different types of technologies. Now, I got to be honest with you. I mean, his ID checks out and his military ID checks out. But I haven't honestly had enough time to go through it enough to find out if everything else checks out. I just found it odd, though. I mean, it was probably 3 or 4 hours before the show. I had talked to Melinda about 6 hours ago, so that's probably a little about 6 hours before the show he gave me a call, and it just kind of floored me. And then all of a sudden, he sent an email over with a copy of his driver's license, a copy of his military ID, and a copy of his Boeing card to get into Boeing. And, you know, it even had a security clearance rated on the bottom of it, which just kind of floored me to start off with. Now, his number checks out, his name checks out, and everything that I've been able to check out is fine. And I called a friend of mine, actually a relative of mine, who's a state trooper in Louisiana, so we have access to the national database. I'm having him run it and see what that comes up with. So I just find, but it's because of shows like yours and other ones that people do get access to it.
All right, how about you, Melinda? Anybody come forward for you?
Yeah, in a variety of ways. First off, in my own experiences, I've had 6 different insiders confirm parts of my own experience.
6?
6 of them.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Three of them specifically independent of each other. I mean, the three of them in separate conversations over about a 5-year period. 3 different guys asked me questions about one of the underground installations I was taken to that I remembered in great detail, and walking around it and where I was led around and interrogated, et cetera, and had me kind of describe it to them. And 3 of these guys, independent of each other, ended up confirming where I was, and all 3 of them used the same term. All 3 of them said, oh, you were at China Lake Annex. So that's what they called it. And this annex, the side portion related to the China Lake Naval Base. Again, that's the 3 different ones, all called it the same thing. One of them even pulled out a napkin. You know, insiders are always pulling out a napkin or a scratch pad or placemat or something and drawing, you know. But this one drew on it kind of some of the layout and asked me some questions. And I also kind of withheld some information to see if he was doing, you know, describing something I saw but hadn't told him, and had it match up. And then another insider told me that a gun I saw, he asked me in great detail, again, I drew this on a napkin in a restaurant with him, drew this particular high-tech weapon I saw on one of the guards, and he said, you just drew that accurately. He then took it and tore it up and said, don't draw that again. He said, I drew something that was still classified. So I had that kind of confirmation. But then additionally, some insiders have somewhat told me, you know, what they know about this. As I said earlier, I talked about Bill Uhouse. He certainly said, you're right on. Yep, you're right. And I know that's happening. And I learned something about it while I was in there. And so I've had a few people come forward in some of my cases. As I said earlier, I had one case that was threatened by an insider who used his detailed knowledge of her experience as a threat against her and it scared her. And then another case of mine where the guy, you know, this insider knew the details of what was happening in her daily life of her son. So I have, it's come up in my cases as well as my own experience.
Okay, to the phones we go. We'll go to Elaine in Utah, first-time caller. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing? You're doing a great show.
Thanks.
I wanted to
thank
comment.
You, Elaine.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I wanted to comment on these presentations that are given to the abductees of catastrophe. And what I notice is that these stories have evolved over time, and they're keyed in to whatever human beings are worried about at the time. There's from the 1930s, if we could go back that far, there's a book, UFOs Are With Us, by Leo Dvorak. And the catastrophe scenes that they were shown was about the rise of fascism. Then in the 1950s, all the catastrophe scenes shown to the abductees had to do with nuclear war. And then in the 60s, it started with environmental catastrophes, and that's what we were worried about at the time. And then it moved on to asteroid collisions. And lately, we've all been worried about the Asian flu pandemic, and Joe described a catastrophe scene shown to an abductee that looked like the aftermath of a terrible death from an epidemic. So basically, the way it looks to me is that they're just showing us whatever works. To me, it looks like they're trying to create fear among us, and creating fear is a basic element of the PSYOP, or a psychological operation. And it's just pathetically easy to frighten us, because after all, they're aliens, and they may even be able to see the future. So to me, the bottom line is these catastrophe scenes that are constantly being shown, maybe they're true, but I think we have to keep a place in our mind to with an alternative interpretation that they're just trying to frighten us.
What do you think about that, Joe?
Well, you know, Elaine, actually, I would agree with that partially, because until about 18 years ago, that's actually what I thought. My problem was is all the cases I have over the last 25 years are the same dream. It's not what the aliens are telling them. This is psychic images. These people are I should say, telepathic images they're picking up on their own. The thing about it is it's been over. It's never changed. It's always been the same thing in these groups. See, we have what we call abduction criteria at ICAR, and what we started doing is we reviewed a lot of the old cases, and I got to be honest with you, at least half the old cases weren't of anything of any consequence, but some of them were. But the thing about it is they were either being told something or shown something. Well, for me, you have to take the contactee in the eye of the beholder. You can show the same contactee the same thing, 30 contactees the same thing, each one's going to see it different. It's just like an eyewitness at a wreck. They're going to all describe something slightly different. And we've learned that with contactees now. So over the years, we've been able to kind of go through and see what's just the way, you know, just a memory the contactees gave themselves to deal with this and what is actually part of the contact. Well, in the Holocaust dreams, the first ones I got were almost 25 years ago. And, you know, when I heard them, I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of scary and wild. But I didn't think much about it. It was only two people, you know, I didn't really. But here I am 25 years later with almost 10,000 cases, and a full third of them are having this dream. And, I mean, the details are – and what scares me is it seems to be slightly offset from the time frame we're in right now. It doesn't seem to be that far in the future, because the automobiles are describing, the buildings are describing, the basic scenery they're describing is pretty much what you see today. The cars might be newer, and the buildings might even be a little newer, but – If I had to put a time date on it, I wouldn't say it was more than 10 years tops. It may be less than that. But in these particular cases, because I know what Elaine's talking about, I ran across that myself a lot. You know, when you started going through, there was this and that, and the aliens, people said the alien showed them this, people said the alien showed them that, but this is a much different beast. This is something that they're picking up on their own, they're relaying, and a lot of them are keeping it in the journals. Honestly, most of them, what they do is they keep these journals and they draw and they sketch and then they bring me the journal. And I can actually take, you know, somebody's journal and compare it to someone else's journal and compare it to somebody else's. And when you start doing that and you start seeing the detail that's in these journals, even to the languages they write themselves, it is scary. Because there is no possible way that these people could be having these style of contacts and these type of images unless they were sharing something in common. And the only thing we know of is the contact that they're sharing.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Dan in Arkansas. Welcome to the show, Dan. Go ahead.
Good morning to everybody.
Yes, sir.
I kind of had a little situation here. Years ago in 2002, I'm a truck driver. I wasn't taken in a craft, but I actually, me and another truck driver, and we were going through Texas, saw something come out of the sky. We thought it might have been a meteorite or something. It came down at an angle, but it never hit the ground. It stopped and then went forward about 300-400 feet. And it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. So we pulled over, he had a video camera, I had a regular camera. We got out, crossed over the fence, and was going over to look at it because it just sat there. It was glowing like a blue-colored, and it was about the size that she was talking about maybe 100, 150 feet in length or diameter. We got close enough that I actually touched this thing, and
wow.
He was videotaping it. And I don't know, you know those electric things they use in the hospital? You know, like if you have bad muscles and they put it on your back and it's like electricity and they can turn it up to, you know, to where it massages your muscles?
Sure.
Well, it was like a real light touch of that, but all through my body when I touched it.
Wow.
And when I turned around to look at the guy while he was videotaping, everything blacked out. And when I woke up, I was sitting in the seat of my truck again.
Wow.
Oh, you're walking up on stuff.
I was scared to death, but you have to understand something. I'm an adventurous person.
Sure.
I was scared to death. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew it was the chance of a lifetime for me to just, whether I told anybody else, or this is the first time I've said anything about it. This was in 2002, February 19th, 2002.
Well,
the question I was going to ask you, because I have had dreams. Like you were talking about these people talking about colonies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have. There used to be a program on TV called The Visitor. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman that was on there. He was basically a person that, and he talked about living in a colony that of people that were taken by aliens and taken to this planet to train them. And he escaped and came back to Earth to try to tell people what was going on. Nobody believed him. But that kind of fell into that same context. But I have these strange dreams, and about every 2 months, and it's basically the same thing. I have these dreams that I'm on this planet where you can look up and there's two moons. And the planets are similar to Earth, but not like Earth, but you can see people around, and then you can see the vehicles. They're not on wheels. They don't touch the ground. You know, the things that they move in and travel in, and, you know, small crafts and you can see some of the grays walking around, and some of the people that are there are just snow white with dark brown eyes and white hair and wearing white silver garb.
Hmm.
And there's only a few of them along with the grays when they come to talk to us. Now, these are just dreams, but I don't know if any of your people have had any of those reactions or not.
First, I want to point out the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. When you said that this thing landed in front of you and you went up and touched it, and then you said you were suddenly sitting in your car?
No, I'm a truck driver. We were driving.
I know, but you were suddenly sitting in your truck after that
happened. Yeah, I was sitting in the driver's seat.
Did you happen to notice by chance that you had any period of time missing?
Actually, yes. It was about an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay. Talking to you further, and it would take someone maybe doing a regression with you and this kind of thing, but all this, you know, heavily suggests that you had an abduction at that time. First off, close-up sightings, close enough where you're able to walk up and touch something, are extremely rare and pretty much an indicator. Joe, you know, you can chime in here, but pretty much an indicator that is, you know,
I was thinking www.icar1.com.
Yeah. Yeah, that you need to talk to someone about this, because I think it's clear that you had an experience there, especially if you were missing over an hour or two combined. So, and then these dreams may be recalled memories, or they may be telepathic stuff you're getting. It's hard to say, but everything you've shared suggests that you're having experience.
What are some of the symptoms, Melinda, with missing time, where people can probably ascertain they've been abducted?
Well, there could be other explanations for missing time, so it doesn't necessarily mean an abduction itself, but certainly if you have a close-range sighting involved with it, if you follow the missing time experience with dreams of aliens, this kind of thing, these are, you know, would suggest there might be more there. But as far as the missing time, I mean, it's like you're in one location. It helps if you're aware of what time it is beforehand, and then suddenly you're somewhere else, or suddenly there's a chunk of time that you can't account for. In some cases, there's witnesses to this, too, where the person believes they're in an environment and the other people say, no, you were gone for a period of time, and they've actually witnessed that the person was missing. The indicators are that you suddenly notice a chunk of time gone.
you would have to possibly think of other things you might be going through mentally. Of course, did you fall asleep? These kinds of things. But if it's totally what the researchers refer to as seamless, where you're there and then suddenly it's, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours later and you can't account for it, and you didn't do anything different, that suggests, you know, something going on. And again, combined with dreams of aliens, after the period of missing time, the next day, over a couple of days, did you have bruises and scars appear on your body that you couldn't account for, and, you know, that kind of thing.
How about burn marks, too, like radiation
burn marks? Sure, sure. Burn marks and all sorts of different patterns, odd-shaped burn marks, rashes, like I said, all sorts of different types of scars, scoop marks, but also straight lines and other things that come up, and bruises. One thing with these military experiences, you know, we didn't talk about this, but there's quite a bit of evidence for these military experiences, and the bruises, like large hands that have grabbed you, are extremely common. You asked before, are people injured from these experiences? Not deliberately, it would seem, like they injure you, so you have that after the experience as they did it to you on purpose. But in the experience, that they tend to be rough. If the abductees resist, you can get manhandled pretty bad and fall down and different things. And abductees get very bruised up in these experiences.
Let's come back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back. We're going to take final phone calls now with our guest Joe Maltaldo and Melinda Leslie. Let's go to first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hey, Jim in Houston.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Caller, 10 years and listening. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe in alien abduction to a point. It's just that I'm an avid astronomer, have been for 25 years. I mean, it's just that when you think about where we're at in the galaxy and the Milky Way, we're on the little edge there, you know? We've been putting out radio signals for about, you know, 70, 80 years. And I don't know. I just want to be convinced, I guess. I mean, don't get me wrong. I believe in alien intelligence. It's just that, you know, this whole abduction thing has only been going on since Roswell, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't hear about it in the 30s or the 20s or the last, you know, few centuries. And I know your callers seem to be very intelligent people, but I'm just trying to get a handle on it. It's just that when you think about it, the odds of us being visited are rather remote. And just wondering how, you know, is this something that, yeah, I'm just trying to. I just want to be convinced.
All right, well, let's sit back, get your reaction first, Joe, because you know this has been going on even longer than just Roswell.
I'll help you out here. Start with the Sumerian text about 6,000 years ago. You'll find out that they talk a great deal about the reptilians and humans and a breeding program, by the way. This is common text that anybody can find. Also, you'll find it in the Egyptian text. You'll also find it in Dogon verbal legend. They talk a great deal about the amphibian reptilians. This all predates modern civilization by 5,000 plus years, so no, abductions didn't start in Roswell. They started much later. Now, I'll give you something that me and Michio Kaku talked about a few months ago. At half of light speed, it will only take 200,000 years to explore the entire galaxy. Sounds like a long time, but the human race is planning on living for several billion years. Now, if you have a race out there that's 500,000, 1 million, 5 million, 15 million years old, not only have they explored the galaxy, but they've explored it several times and set up colonies all over the place. And this is using just normal technology, not faster than light or anything else. This is what they call stepping stones, just like we're going to do. We're going to step out to Mars, and we're going to step out to Jupiter, then we're going to step halfway between here and Proxima Centauri, and we're going to step out to Proxima, and then on and on and on until we explore the galaxy without ever using light speed. So don't assume because we can't go faster than light that you can't explore the galaxy. That would be a bad assumption. Most modern scientists agree today eventually man will explore the entire galaxy even if it's below light speed. So to think a race that's much older than us, because remember the human race is very young, a million, million and a half, 2 million tops. We're a very young race on a very young planet that, you know, the planet's what, 4.8 billion years old now and the race is 2 million years old, so if you find a red dwarf or a sun that's out there that's in its 10, 11 billion years and life's been on it for 5 or 6 billion years, they've easily explored the galaxy without any real problems at all. So as far as, you know, everybody always assumes that these grays are jitting across, but as far as we know, they could be coming from the moon, from Mars, from any of the outer planets. They could have been here for tens of thousands of years. So you just can't rule it out because you don't think they can get here.
And Melinda, you've been abducted, so you know,
yeah.
you're first to hand the case here.
Well, thank you. Ditto to everything he just said, and I'll add, first off, when you get to the number of alien abduction experiences, you don't have, you know, these hundreds of thousands of people lying, or let's say even say thousands, if you add up all the cases of the researchers and people that have come forward in some way and their case has been documented, they're, you know, these people aren't all making it up. They're not all lying. They're not all delusional. I mean, even if you weeded out any percentage that would fit any of those categories, you would still be left with thousands of people that have truly had experiences and have evidence for them, tremendous amounts of different types of evidence, including the work of Roger Lear, as we talked about earlier, with the removal of the implants. And then if there aren't alien abductions, why, and I can speak to my own case, why would the government pick me up, take me to a known underground military base, interrogate me about alien technology? Why would they spend the money? Why would they risk being seen doing that? I had bruises and marks on my body and evidence after the fact. I had memory after the fact. I had other environmental effects after the fact. Then I had three separate insiders come forward and describe to me where I was taken and tell me the name. Now, I didn't tell them anything about my experience as far as where specifically I thought it was. I just gave a brief description, so there was nothing why three people would come back to me with the same answer. And then the whole point why I was there in that location for that particular experience is I was being interrogated about the alien technology. I was being asked about it. I was put in a deep hypnotic state where I was asked to draw what I saw. All this was because they really wanted to know that information about my alien experience. And I had been given a suggestion in a prior experience with them to retain specific technical information so that they could pick me up again and retrieve that information. Why would that have happened? Why would any government agency or black ops agency be spending the time and energy on me unless that was the case? I mean, there's no other reason why they would have an involvement in my life, and this goes for the other cases I
sure.
work with too.
Shouldn't
there's
be.
There's no reason that they would have an involvement in their life except for the fact that these people have really had alien experiences.
Okay, next up, let's go to Victoria, British Columbia. Simon on the international line. Hey, Simon.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, how you
doing? One of my favorite all-time 80s miniseries was a series called V.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in.
Great show.
Just a question, though. Like, from my standpoint, from my point of view, and from listening to George and Art and watching all the other shows out there, it seems to me that the only abductees that have been happening to are people from the white, like Caucasian people.
Not
I never
true.
Hear. I know, but I never hear any of Africans or blacks or Chinese or Japanese people talking or expressing their views on this topic.
Ooh, Barney, don't forget the Barney and Betty Hill case of a
That's
long time ago.
Too.
He was an African American.
And there are
really
many
don't...
others.
Well,
I worked
Peter
with
Davenport,
the case.
Right,
I'm sure she won't mention my your name. Hello.
Oh, he's gone. But
oh,
that's
okay.
Okay.
Well, hopefully he's listening, but for everyone else too, I have a case of an African American woman who is an amazing case, who has both had extensive abduction and the military involvement experience. I have another couple cases. I have cases from people who are from other countries, other nationalities. I have a couple of great Hispanic cases. You know, so it's unfortunately it's part of the media portrayal that it seems like the people who've come forward and written books and stuff are predominantly, you know, Caucasian. But that's not true to people having the experiences. Certainly the experiences are happening to people all over the world of every race.
Well, doesn't Craig Jacobs, Jacobs have his book out? Like,
David Jacobs?
No, not David Jacobs. His name is Craig. Oh, I'm probably messing his last name. I think it's Craig Jacobs, Jay Cox, actually. Damn, I wish I had the correct pronunciation with me, but he's a contact. He's also black, and he's been public for a few years, and he's not the only one I know that's been public.
I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's not because they're not out there talking about it. I just don't think they're being picked up on for whatever reason.
Well, and, I've got to be honest, you know, unless we specifically know of a case like with you or with Travis Walton, I don't know the race of the person who's abducted.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter as far as the aliens are concerned. They don't. I don't think they care. For us, if I go by my caseload, it's pretty much per capita. You know, it doesn't seem to be any different in the ratio or whatever the race ratio for that area may be. It just doesn't really seem to be any different.
Now, here's one thing we haven't talked about yet. Can you or have you explained at all the cattle mutilation phenomenon?
Oh, you have to get me in trouble with Linda.
Yeah, you're just in trouble.
Yeah, he just wants to give me trouble with Linda Volkow.
Don't go after Linda, Joe. She's too tough.
Oh, I love Linda. She was just on the show a couple weeks ago. Linda is great. Actually, I agree with Linda on some of the stuff about cattle mutilations, but I honestly do think, George, a good chunk of them, I don't know if you've seen this show that was on Science called Trinity and Beyond.
Yes.
One of the things they talk about at the end of the show is the government using cattle to monitor radiation contamination.
Very possible. Yeah. Very possible.
Yeah, so in some of these areas now, you know, where we did do nuclear tests and there are a lot of cattle mutilations, I do really think that's what is going on there. Because I also found something that was really interesting. A lot of those, when I checked them, the cows were insured. So the rancher didn't lose anything. You know, they picked it up, they did what they did.
Yeah.
The rancher actually got his money back on his cow. So in those cases, I actually think that's our government just checking, because they happen. You know, most cattle mutilations in the United States happen west of the Mississippi River, and that's where the nuclear test, not all of it, but most of it was done.
Well, why don't they test it, put some cattle in a little pen?
Because they get sued. They can't let you know they're testing, George. Now, if we all think there's contaminants out in the Midwest, we're going to all be a little upset.
Well, that's a good point.
You know, so they're hiding that. But I don't think all of them, you know, because I want people to understand, I don't think all cattle mutilations are government. I just think that some of them, or maybe half of them, are definitely government. But there's some, and Linda Moulton Howard convinced me on this point. She was talking about a particular case where the heart was taken out from the sac of the
perfect heart. Incision.
Yes.
Right?
And you know, that
no blood.
Seems a little bit more than the technologies we possess. Now, some of the other ones where they're taking out the tongue and other parts, those are parts, by the way, where the radiation builds up in the cattle body.
Well, and if they were drinking or eating, they may want to be able to grab that part of the anatomy.
So I think you have a twofold project going on here, and, you know, government's definitely involved, because, you know, a lot of the cases in the Midwest, they report black helicopters, not UFOs. And that just doesn't, you know, it doesn't just smell like extraterrestrially. You know, and sometimes there's skid marks in the ground. Sounds like the government. It doesn't sound like extraterrestrials. But there are cases where it defies any other explanation but extraterrestrial. There's just, you know, no marks, no incisions. You know, now I know we have vacuum pumps and laser scalpels now. That wasn't 30 years ago. And if we did have them, I mean, last time I heard in the 70s, we had laser scalpels, but they were so big you couldn't have gotten them in the field if you needed.
Let's go to Gene in Idaho. You're up with us. Gene, thanks for holding.
How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I don't know quite how to start this out. I actually remember being born.
You remember being born?
Exactly. I told my mother about this, and I described exactly what the doctor was wearing, what he looked like, and I actually lifted up, did a push-up, and was looking around. And but not only that, but I can actually remember before I was born, and I was on a craft with Grays, and they told me that they found some people for me, and
you think they implanted you into your mother?
Well, it's strange, because it was like we were on a craft, and there was a lot of people with us, and we were kind of like in line going towards, like, I call it a pillar of light, kind of like black and gold light. And right before I got to it, I looked towards my right, and there was a Gray sitting there. And he was telling me that I have to keep faith. Everything's going to be okay.
Well, see, Melinda, he sounds like he is a hybrid. What do you think?
Yeah, possibly. Or he could be remembering a different abduction experience and labeling it, you know, with this other. In other words, it could be memories from different things and pulling them together. It would take further investigation, obviously, to find out.
Should he undergo hypnotherapy?
Hypnotherapy, now, Joe, you can chime in on this, too. Hypnotherapy is a tool to help someone remember. A lot of people do remember things consciously. It's a great tool if you have to trust and have a good relationship with the hypnotherapist. There's a number of people. Yvonne Smith comes to mind, Barbara Lamb, Bud.
Bruce Goldberg, I like him.
Bruce Goldberg, yeah. And there's a number of people that are very, very good with it out there and who I could recommend to people. But that it's just a tool to help you get to the memories. It's basically you get in a relaxed state of mind.
Well, isn't that what you think he needs?
He needs support group.
I think it's like this
support
with aggression.
Group?
Yeah, first.
Yeah.
Well, what do you suggest he do? Contact you through ICAR 1?
He can contact me, or if there happens to be someone like the Zero Group. It depends where he is in the country. I mean, we have no problem.
He's in Idaho.
Well, yeah, actually, he'd probably be better contact than us because we actually have people up in Idaho. But if you can get with a support group, you may recover a lot of these memories without the need of regression. I mean, we use it. Don't get me wrong. My wife is a hypnotherapist.
There's nothing wrong with being regressed, though, is it? It's not going to hurt him.
The reason we don't like to use it is there's so much controversy in the field about hypnosis that we try to use it when we need to, but we try to recover those memories by every other means possible first. And then if we can't, we will use regression. But we really try not to because we don't, because not everybody to start off with is that really good at it, and sometimes they fumble around and actually add stuff to the contact by using the wrong words, you know, like using the word alien when you're regressing someone. You can't do that. You have to get them to describe what they're seeing in their own words so that you have an understanding of what it is. If you start throwing in words like spaceships or aliens or saucers,
you taint it.
You tainted it. So, we try not to do that unless we have to. And then even then, we're very strict on how we do it. But most of in today's ufology, most of the people doing regression are very strict. They have a much stricter alignment in the way they do regressions, and it's much better for evidence than, say, it was 20, 25 years ago.
Sure.
And that's basically because we learn from the mistakes that were made then. That's what it comes down to.
If he's in Idaho, I can think of the closest person I can think of that comes to mind right away would be Dr. Leo Sprinkle in Wyoming.
Yeah, is Leo still doing this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely, he's fantastic.
He's still hanging in there.
Yeah, Leo's fantastic.
He's way up there, but he's
and
still
Leo
doing.
Has quite a few. I've interviewed him extensively about it. My lab cases and his research. He works with people. He says he's had about a dozen cases or so of the actual reabduction. Last time I talked to him, which was actually a couple of years ago, I think I did talk to him about a year ago, and he says he has more since then. His harassment and surveillance cases number in the hundreds. And
he's good.
Yeah,
he's good. Okay, we are out of time, gentlemen and Melinda. Is.
Thank you.
Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com, so everybody's got them. And I assume over the next couple of days, both of you will get deluge with emails.
Oh, yeah. Last time, 50,000 emails, thanks to you.
Oh, my gosh.
And my email can be reached through Joe's site.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right, Melinda, you've got the honors to say goodnight to everybody for me.
Well, good night, everyone. Thank you so much for listening and hearing about our research. We appreciate it. And have a very good evening.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Pundit and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.